and welcome to Best Girl Grip, the podcast that celebrates the women behind the scenes of the British film industry. I'm your host, Nicole Davis. I wanted to start this podcast because it felt like there were lots of roles, be it in distribution, marketing, programming, post-production, or even on a film set, that don't get the attention they deserve. Likewise to the women doing those jobs. I'll be interviewing guests on how they got their start in the film industry, what it is they actually do, what keeps them motivated, and what their ambitions are. Hello, pod pals. I hope you're enjoying the weekend sunshine and doing something outdoorsy, or at least supplementing your binge of Russian Doll with something like sticking your head out of the window. I, for one, am daydreaming about a walk I took on Hampstead Heath last week. So for this episode, unfortunately, I'm required to begin on a bum note. The sound quality does not match up to the quality of the guest, and for that I am regretful. Even so, I think it's a jolly good listen because there are some gems of wisdom lurking amidst the slightly fuzzy sound. My guest this week is Emma Duffy, an independent producer and also an executive producer at the Wellcome Trust. Last year, the first feature that she produced, Mari, premiered at the London Film Festival. Look out for a fun story featuring Oscar Isaac about that night. Mari tells the story of Charlotte, a successful contemporary dancer played by Bobby Jean Smith, a very successful contemporary dancer, who returns to her family home in Dorset whilst her grandmother Mari is dying. Combining nuanced family drama with expressive and dynamic dance scenes, it's unlikely you've ever seen anything like Mari before. I particularly love the interaction between Charlotte, her older sister, and her mother, which really gets the flinty and incomparable nature of female familial relationships right. It'll be released later this year, so keep your eyes peeled for that. So having seen that at LFF, I was already a bit of a fangirl of Emma, and I'm now even more so. Emma has produced commercials, music videos and shorts, including Oysters, which was commissioned as part of London Calling Plus in 2016. And she also has exec producer credits on Sarah Gavron's next film, Girl Untitled, and Craig Roberts' sophomore feature, Eternal Beauty, through her work at the Wellcome Trust. We talk about lots of different things, such as lamenting the fall of Ideas Tap, the changing face of distribution, the mantra she uses to keep things in perspective, and knowing your own worth. This was a really rewarding chat for me just because I think Emma is one of those people that cares about her work and wants to make good things with good people. So I do hope you agree. Here we go. This is episode 7 of Best Girl Grip.
I'm also an executive producer at the Wellcome Trust, who are a biomedical charitable trust, not necessarily what you'd expect. I've just produced my first feature film through the micro schemes that was backed by the BFI and the BBC and made through Film London. And my first job in film, it's kind of hard to pinpoint when it starts, because it's like, do you pinpoint it when you start getting paid? Is it when you make your own thing? But it wasn't something that I planned on getting involved in at all. I moved to Australia after I left university, and one of my best friends was at film school at VCA in Melbourne, which is a very prestigious film school, and she was in her final year and needed a producer for her film. And I had 2 or 3 glasses of wine at a party and said, yeah, sure, how hard can it be? And then flash forward a few months and I was on set and really got the bug for it, and it went really well. But it still felt a bit like something that was maybe a pipe dream. So even at that point, I don't think I admitted to myself out loud, like, I think I want to produce films, because it just seemed like it was in a different world. And I hadn't studied it. I studied English at uni. So I sort of, not forgot about it for a bit, but just sort of worked more broadly on things, or worked on things that felt more sustainable or more sensible, that were still in that sort of realm. Like, just after I finished that short, I was lucky to work with this really amazing filmmaker called Jenny Bailey in Australia, and she made a film called I Am 11, and I assisted her a little bit with the release of that film, and it gave me like a really good appetite for audiences and people. And I was working at a fringe festival at the time as well, so I thought, like, maybe that's what I want to do, more audiences and stuff. So I was looking at the arts in general, moved back to London, started a master's that was like that, because I felt like that's a sensible thing to do. I'll study it and I'll get a job at like the Tate or at a film festival, or, you know, that feels like, I'm allowed to do that. And then I got 5 weeks into the course and had a crisis. Wow. And was like, this isn't what I want to do, this is a massive waste of money. Like, and I've moved all the way back here after 3 years and uprooted my whole life. And so, and then having that just made me feel like, well, what is it that you actually really, really want to do? Since then, I've just sort of been quite lucky and followed my nose and just doggedly gone after any opportunity I could that I could afford to do, which is actually harder than, it's really, really hard.
Because, yeah, so many assistant positions are on tape, yeah. As you say.
And I was starting from scratch as well, so, like, yes, I had a tiny bit of knowledge about film, but not about the industry at all. It was like having read a student short or a couple of student shorts and working on this very independent, self-funded, but like very successful independent documentary, and in Australia. So it's just like I had no contacts or anything. So I interned at the BFI when they were unpaid internships,
yeah.
And I think they had one that was part-time, so I could do that one. And I was lucky that I had, because I'd had like a really boring office job in Australia, it was actually one of the best things I ever did, because it made me very employable and meant that I wasn't having to be working in a bar or a restaurant and not being able to earn enough money the rest of the time of the week on top of my internship. Like, I could actually get a decent wage. So I worked there for a couple of years. I was an intern here for a bit. I was applying for jobs and not getting anywhere and really not having any idea what I was doing. And then I got a job through Ideas Tap. That website was great,
yeah.
Because there was an entry-level position that paid like all right, and it was assisting at a commercials production company. And now I like don't actually know where you would find that job.
There's like some, there's artsjobs.co.uk, yeah. Something like that, which I think is a bit in terms of.
But that seems like a maybe slightly more, because this was like a tiny company.
Suited towards young people.
Yeah, and that sort of more startup-y freelance type work, where like you need money, but you're not necessarily at the level that you're going to be going for a more established company that's on those sorts of websites. So I was lucky that that was like that little window of time that was there, and I worked there for 6 months. That gave me good experience of sort of being on set. After that, I was when I started working at Film London, and that's when it felt like things came together a little bit, because I'd had experience of doing the sort of creative and logistical side for this. Like, they were a commercials company, but they did a lot of music videos, and I had ambitions for doing drama, which I really supported them with. And then it was like being on the other side of it, because it was in the talent development team. I was coordinating a lot of sort of like, they've got Microwave, but they had an international version for a while. We did Shakespeare India, which is one of them. And I didn't know anything about it, but I was just coordinating it. It allowed me to just absorb everything from all of the brilliant mentors that they had on those schemes for the filmmakers. And then I've met some filmmakers, precisely met some filmmakers through doing them as well, through running them, two of whom I actually ended up working with on a short after I left. So that was sort of like, because it was a contract position as well, it was only for a year, I was like, I'll just sort of treat that as like film school, because it is on that talent development end, and I'll just work really hard and listen to every intelligent person then that I came across. It was very meandering up until then.
I was going to say
just by necessity, because like I applied to the NFTS, I didn't get in, and you know, like all of those things where it would have been really clear, but they didn't happen.
Prior to working at Film London, did you know anyone that produced? Did you know what that role necessarily entailed?
No, I don't think I did at all.
And was it then that you kind of put two and two together of like, okay, this is the path I want to pursue?
Yeah, seeing people who actually had made it work, or like even meeting people who I'd like seen films that they made and I really liked them, being like, oh, and you know, learning about how they've got them made was invaluable. Because I had a vague idea from when I was working in Australia, and like I'd seen people distribute films and things, but again, it was very, very independent.
And when did you have that light bulb moment?
I remember very early on when I was working there, one of the other people who was in the same team as me, his name's Olivia Kempfer, and he did Appropriate Behaviour.
Yeah.
And they'd done the UK premiere, so after it'd done its festival circuits, it was actually out on release. And they did a screening. And I just remember, like, I really just loved that film. And I was like, oh, that person made that film is not completely impossible.
Mm.
And also that sort of film got made, like, that it felt like it was very much up my street. It was made by people who were, like, if not exactly my age, not, you know, a huge reach away from myself. And that was quite inspiring.
And so from Film London, what was your next role?
So I left and I didn't know exactly what I was doing, but I knew I wanted to at least say, like, I'm a producer and I'm producing. So I went straight into making a short. And at the same time, Position came up with the Wellcome Trust.
Okay.
That was initially just to, like, project manage and that event produced the Screenwriting Fellowship. And I was having Rory Candy, who was the drama exec at the time, who was a brilliant, brilliant woman. But we were working really closely together, so I started taking on more responsibilities, and then she actually left early last year, so that role sort of evolved to eventually me exec producing projects as well as working with our screenwriting fellows, which is like a yearly thing that happens, and we give writer or writer director £30,000, and then they have the year to basically explore whatever they want.
And what does your role, what's your function within that?
I'm the only person there now who works on film and drama.
Okay.
I oversee our slate for our film projects, not our docs, but drama and film, and I manage the whole of the Screenwriting Fellowship as well, along with the chair of the Screenwriting Fellowship, Kate Leeds. Yes, it's quite a lot of, been quite a lot of work this year. So I was very lucky in that regard as well, because that's a part-time role, which is very rare. So that enabled me to produce my first feature, Mari, the last couple of years. So it was perfect, really, as it turned out.
Do you like striking that balance between having perhaps like an office job that you have a desk that you go to, and then having producing, which is obviously a bit more random?
It's been, I can't say I've massively enjoyed balancing the practical aspects of the two things, because it's at times felt a bit conflicting. What has been really, really lovely, and I feel very privileged to have, is that it satisfies two completely different parts of your brain. So producing is so intense. I mean, you get stuck in, it takes over your whole life, but it takes a very, very long time. So, you know, Mari was massively fulfilling because it was like mine and my director, George Paris's baby, and that sense of influence and ownership was amazing. But if I had just had that one project, I think the frustrations involved in that would have been more intense than the fact that I've also got a job that allows me to see projects come through and they're not my responsibility in the same way. It's a privilege as well to be in a position where you are enabling things to happen. So, for example, Girl Untitled, which is Sarah Gavron's film, I happened to get talking to one of the producers, and I was like, you should think about, like, have a look at Wellcome's funding, think about coming in, because the way they were making the film was so unique, and I thought that there could be a really interesting way for them to involve research that we haven't done in any of our previous co-productions. I feel very lucky to have both of them to work on that variety of projects at this stage in my career.
How did Mari come about? Where did you meet Georgia?
We met specifically to apply for Microwave. So I had always thought that I wanted to apply because I knew it was the final year of that slate of the scheme. And I felt like having worked on some of the international versions we did were very different. But that sense of like feeling like I knew what made it a micro-budget project, that I really wanted to use that knowledge and give it a crack at the application at least. And as it turned out, like none of the writers or directors that I was working with were like quite at the right stage or the right budget. And so I found myself like a month out from the deadline, like, oh, I don't have, it's, you know, it's not going to work out, I can't believe it. And then I was on the Edinburgh Talent Lab, and another producer on the lab was just chatting to me, and she'd done Microwave the year before. And she said, oh, are you going to apply? And I said, I was going to, but there's, you know, nothing that quite feels like I can justify putting it in. She was like, oh, what are you looking for? And I said, I really want to work with a woman, because a lot of the people I was thinking of working with at that time, I realised were all men, and that wasn't what I wanted to put my money where my mouth was. And Also, I just made a short with a writer and director separately, which was a new experience to me because I'd only worked with writer directors before and it was really interesting, but I realised it wasn't necessarily playing to my strengths, and I felt like for my first feature, you really want to...
Is that because it's easier to align two visions than, say, three?
I don't know. I do, because I certainly some people are brilliant at it, and I just found... I like to be quite creatively invested, and I just find that easier when it's that dialogue and just that certainty of, like, we know what it is that we're doing. And then my friend was like, oh, yeah, there's somebody who's emailed me, who's emailed somebody else, and there's this treatment sitting in my inbox, but she was like, you know, I've done microwave already and I've got loads of stuff on my plate already, so it's not for me. And then I read George's treatment on the train back from Edinburgh, and I was like, oh, yeah, I definitely want to meet this woman. So then we met up, and we... just went for a coffee, and we ended up talking for like 4 hours about my grandmother's and the script. So then we were about 3 weeks out from the deadline, so we did another draft and submitted, and then
and
it was such luck because we get on so well and work incredibly well together. I think I feel very lucky that it was a complete chance in a way.
So then you applied to Microwave, and then was that all you needed for budget, or you needed to get investment elsewhere?
So the Microwave scheme, they cap the budget and you have to raise a third of it yourself as well, so you can't raise any more. That's what that is. So, and that was one of the reasons that I was attracted to the project, was because Georgia had this brilliant vision for incorporating the dance in with the drama. It just felt to me like that gave it enough to lift it out of its budget, because I think otherwise... But £150,000 is really, you can't do much more than have a handful of characters, a handful of locations. And for a debut director, that's very challenging to make it cinematic, like to make it worthwhile as a piece of cinema. And Georgia did the drama beautifully, but her sort of stroke of genius was also having the dance in there too and really enriching it, and that didn't really cost very much to make, to rehearse that. Like, it took an awful lot of time developing it, and we were very lucky with the collaborators that we got and the amount of time that they put in, but it's not the same as hard production costs. I thought that from the outset that, like, this was something that was going to be really hard to do, but it was feasible.
What was the shoot like?
It was very quick. We shot it in 16 days, so over 3 weeks. Which now that I look back, like, it's nearly a year on, I actually don't know how we did it. We just had the best crew, and George is an absolute gun. And I think there's a thing of, like, adrenaline will get you a very, very long way, especially if it's such a short period of time. Like, it's going to keep people's spirits up quite easily. And because it was different, and because Georgia's got a real gift for collaborating with people, everyone wanted to be there all the time. So it wasn't this, we weren't twisting anybody's arm. It was really, like, every production has its difficulties or bad days, but genuinely, every single day that I was on set, I was, like, pinching myself at some point. Not to say it wasn't without its difficulties, because we shot in... winter, so it was like in February, so like very short days, very cold. And we shot part of it in London, then went down to Dorset, and then came back up to London again. So yeah, we're just making the most out of the places that we had. And it helped as well that Georgia, her family are from Sherborne in Dorset. She knew a lot of those places, so we weren't searching around for impossible locations. It was like, she was like, I know I want the Abbey, I know I want this shot of this street.
Were there any problems on set that you as a producer had to troubleshoot because of budgetary constraints?
We lost our hospital location 4 days before we shot, and we were shooting the day we found out. But I just had like the best team. Like, my line producer told me about it and I was like, oh shit. And then I went back onto set, and then when I came back a few hours later, they were like, I think we fixed it. And we had a better location that we wouldn't have been able to afford in the first place for less money than we would have had, because they'd had someone drop out, so we got it for peanuts. So it's one of those things that if you think back on too long, you will panic.
Yeah.
but it all worked out. Like, lots of things like that where, particularly making something on this budget, you're relying on favours a lot, which is just not a nice feeling, because the actual cash contingency you should have for favours should be the amount it would cost you to replace it at value.
Okay.
But that's not what the scheme allows for. Yeah. So you've got, we had favours for the accommodation, say, down in Sherborne with local schools, and we had two solid offers in writing pull out back to back within a couple of weeks, like less than a month before we went down. So that was slightly crunchy for me, but I think there's something about just having to find a solution. Like, it's got to happen somehow.
So having that ability to problem solve crucial to being a good producer?
I think so. I think you have to like a problem. I'm not sure if I like problems that are that big, where you're suddenly thinking, oh my god, we can't actually afford to shoot down there anymore. Certainly, I think that was one of the things that attracted me to it in the first place. But that's been usurped slightly now by the ambition for actually what you want the projects to get, and then suddenly the problems become less fun because they're getting in the way of that.
What's really interesting to me about your career is that you get exec producer credits from working at Wellcome Trust, and then obviously Mari was your first producer credit. A lot of people don't particularly know what distinguishes those two roles. They see exec producing as perhaps being the money and aren't really sure of what producing entails. Can you speak to that difference?
I think they're massively different. Generally, I think executive producing, in my experience, tends to be the money. It tends to be the people who are backing it. But that doesn't mean they're not going to have any creative input at all. I know that on our film, the people who acted as our execs, who actually aren't all credited as such because it's through the micro scheme.
Mm-hmm.
But people at the BBC and the BFI and Film London were really helpful and supportive, and they're there to sort of bounce ideas off.
Mm. And is that support coming at script level?
It can be at script level, it could be production when they're watching rushes and stuff. It can be in the edit. For example, that's when I've done the other side of things, as an exec at Wellcome. That's certainly what I've done. Although I try, because I know what's happening on the other side of the table, to shut up. Because I think sometimes you can have too many cooks.
What do you think the biggest misconception around what a producer does is?
That we've got loads of money and that we're somehow like not filmmakers ourselves, or that we're working against the filmmakers. Because I think if you've got the right producer, nobody is working harder for your film than the producer. With my experience with making Mari, I just felt like me and Georgia were such a strong team, and we just were in complete agreement all the time as to the film that we were making, which is just the luckiest position to be in, because that was one of the biggest lessons I learned making the film, is that's the film. It's what's in your heads. Like, it's really hard if we've made it and you're pitching it to people, or you're getting script notes and taking them back and trying to decide which ones to take and which ones to say thank you, but I don't think that's quite right. But ultimately, you know your film better than anybody else as a team, and trying to protect that little kernel of an idea and thread it all the way throughout a process that is by nature and necessarily very collaborative and open, making sure that you're open in the right ways and in the right places, is so hard. And I think that's why you really need a team, because you can, like, I found myself naturally getting lost at some point during that period and being like, I don't know what's right to do anymore, whether it was like something to do with casting or something in the edit. But that's why there's more than one of you. So you can get lost, as long as the film doesn't, because the other person's there, like, as the sounding board, or, and so between you, you'll sort of navigate it.
Speaking of through protecting the kernel, presumably that continues. So what's the journey been like from post? It obviously premiered at the London Film Festival last year. that must be an ongoing relationship with the film to have more people come on board, like distributors.
And it's so different. It's like how I imagine it must be if you have a child and you send it to school and you're like, oh no, other people might make fun of them. And like, it's not up to you anymore. Like, there's opinions out there, and in some ways that's phenomenal. You know, we were kind of blown away with some of the responses from LFF with the audiences. You know, I was frankly just surprised, like the fact that we sold out, that was wonderful. And you know, having people who really have no connection to the film at all,
also Isaac was at the screen, which is very
that was lovely. he's a very good friend of Bobby Jean's.
Yes, well, Alvira, his partner, did the documentary.
Yeah.
So that was quite a cool.
So I said to him, Alvira, I didn't get to say hello to her properly, but I was like, we owe her the film because we. Having that film to point to was so helpful with casting her, to say, like, I know it's not the same thing, and it's not acting, she's being her, but look how captivating she is on camera for an hour and a half. Like, this is somebody with the presence on screen that can carry a story on the big screen. And if we hadn't had that to point to, I think it would have been very difficult. And then he joked and was like, actually, I introduced Alvira
to Bobby.
So you got me to that. But that film's phenomenal. Then you take it out to distribution. It's like, it's a very strange world. I find that one of the hardest things to get my head around.
Because
it's changing so quickly. I think in this country there's quite a lot of nervousness, which is the opposite vibe that you want. When you're like, please take our film that has dance in and no names. And but on the flip side, I think there's a huge opportunity in the fact that there's lots of change going on at the moment, and all of the traditional models are getting shaken up. I think that's because there is an appetite for different ways of consuming films. But it's just really hard because that's the financial underpinnings of the whole industry that I'm only just starting to wrap my head around. So it's striking a balance between moving on to new ways that will be sustainable, but not so swiftly that, you know, huge parts of the industry just fall in. Yeah.
They also like want on need proof as well, don't they? So it's hard, but it's kind of only been around for the last couple of years.
Yeah.
And are you going to continue working with Georgia? Is that a partnership you see having longevity?
So we're in development now for our next film, which I'm really excited about. Can't say exactly what it's about yet, but...
Is that the part of the process that you like the most, developing with the writer?
It is very fulfilling because it's immediately gratifying. Mm. Like, you have a problem, you talk it out, and then you make a leap forward, ask any writer. Doesn't feel that fun before you figure out what the breakthrough is, but it's that stage where like anything is possible, and it's kind of magic as well because that's the film you're going to end up making. But I have to say, it was only for 3 weeks we were shooting, like when it was over, I mean, we were exhausted because of how intense it was, but like I was. The next day I was just gutted that I wasn't on set.
So that's my favourite thing.
I think just because that's when it's the most collaborative. You've got, you know, not all the people involved, because obviously it's a more involved process than that, but that's when you have most of your gang.
Mm.
And we were so lucky with the people we collaborated with. Like, we punched quite high for the scale that we were on. And got some really good HODs, and so it was just really lovely because there wasn't much sense of like anyone being too flustered.
Have you ever had a mentor in the industry, or someone, another woman that produces, that you feel like you can go to and say, how do you get it done?
I think, so I got matched with a mentor for Microwave, which I think is like fairly standard for those sorts of schemes, which was Phil O'Cronin O'Reilly, who did Lady Macbeth, and she was really helpful because she's very strong-willed, and sometimes when you're, particularly I think if you're on a scheme, you get to this sense where you're fitting in with the the model and the programme as it is, and you feel, and also because it's directly competitive, instead of it being like applying to a film fund and you know that you're competing with other films, but it's not explicit. Whereas with Microwave, you're like, oh, it's that team and that team, and you know, so you feel very, very lucky to have got there, but then that's quite hard to reconcile with also fighting your corner for how you think you should then proceed. And she was very good with that, because she would give me sort of pep talks and fire me up.
Yeah.
And she's clearly like a phenomenal producer and is going from strength to strength herself, so I couldn't have asked for better advice. And then more generally, I've been really lucky to work for and with some really brilliant women as well. So not necessarily that their careers would be ones I would emulate, but more just seeing how they approach new challenges. It's just helpful just to observe that. So Deborah Sarte, who hired me when I was at Film London, she's now working at CineSun. She was great to work for. She taught me a lot about, like, as a woman, not waiting until you have collected all of the evidence to prove why you are allowed to do the thing. Now, just do it. Do it, figure it out.
I remember being in a meeting once with Deborah and another great boss lady that both just like owned the room.
Yeah.
And when they spoke, everybody listened. And I just remember thinking, I want to be like that.
Yeah. Deborah was a force and was really supportive as well. And actually, she interviewed me for a different job at Film London, and I thought it had gone really well, and then I didn't get it. And she called me back like weeks later and was like, I never really explained properly why I didn't get it. It's just because I thought you'd be bored, maybe overqualified, but I'm going to find you something else.
Oh.
And I was like, that's very nice, but I'd rather just have this job now. Anyway, and I thought like, oh, she's probably just being nice. And then kept in touch with her, and then a year later, true to her word, she was like, I told you I'd find you this thing, and now come.
Yeah.
And lots of people sort of bullshit with that stuff, and
which
is nice, because when she was like, oh, now I'll find you something else, I was like, yeah.
Do you feel like you have to work harder in this industry being a woman, or that you have to fight harder to tell women's stories?
So the first one, in terms of whether you have to work harder, I don't know if I have to work harder, but I think women have to work, or not just women, but anybody who is sort of told by the way that, you know, you look around and you are underrepresented, have to work much more consciously than people who've traditionally held the power, because I just don't think you can be as casual with things. The way you have to navigate things more carefully, I think, and I can't imagine how much that is exacerbated or heightened if you're a person of colour, or you're working class, queer, or you have disability. Like, any of the, just those things mean you have to, I don't think you can just sort of like breeze into spaces in the same way. Or for example, like, I found it harder, particularly when I was younger, a young woman, in terms of how you present yourself and how you're being perceived. Like, there's a very fine line between lots of different ways to be perceived, and that's really tiring. Actually, it doesn't necessarily mean you have to work harder, but I think you're having to adjust yourself.
Yeah, that awareness.
All the time. Yeah. Well, not all the time, but certainly more than you would if you're like an Oxbridge educated, straight, white man, which doesn't mean that that person isn't meant to be there, but if somebody's path is easier, it isn't necessarily just that it's easier, it's just how much more mental space they have to spend on time actually being good at their work, instead of thinking, I wonder if that person interpreted what I said the other day as this or that. And then in terms of women's stories, I think the appetite's always been there. I remember when I was interning at the BFI, part of the work I did was at the research statistics unit, and it was like those numbers were just starting to come out about the fact that films that were helmed by women were actually doing disproportionately better at the box office. And I still don't think that appetite has been quite addressed, because they're clearly still being lapped up. So I think people are certainly cottoning on to that. So I don't think you have to work harder to get them told necessarily, but I think there's still a sense of like what a female filmmaker should be is perhaps still not quite caught up.
The genres that they're expected to go at.
Yeah. I think Evie Yates, who's now at the BBC, and she was saying that the biggest piece of advice she would give to female writer directors is, like, don't necessarily brand yourself as a director, because there's this, you can pigeonhole yourself so easily as a female director, like, by making, say, your first film, and it be something very, very personal, and then nobody ever sends you a script, because they think you can only do really big stories that are very personal to you or about women, or whereas nobody would think that about a man.
Yeah, I was really going to say recently about that, actually. Mm-hmm. But even if you don't write a story that's about you,
people still
women writers
that.
Get asked, like, oh, like, what part of your life is it based
yeah,
on? That's
totally. That's not to say that you shouldn't, like, I just, you know, Mari is very close to George's family experience, and that's right for some filmmakers, but again, it's just, I think, women or people from backgrounds that aren't well represented, you just have to be more careful about what image you're putting out there, because I think it's so much easier to get pigeonholed.
Is producing where you see yourself staying, at least for the time being, or are there other aspects of the industry that you want to explore?
No, I think producing what I want to do. I think if I went on to anything else, it would be much more of a sideways move. Oh, I always fancy myself as an editor, but I just don't think I'm talented enough.
Yeah,
they're amazing.
I know, it's like magic.
It's total magic. I'm in awe.
Do you sit in the editing room when you're working in post?
I sat in a fair bit. This is what's really great, actually, about being an exec, is that you get to see how other films structure this stuff in their relationships, and you realise there's, like, so many different ways to do it. So I think I sit in perhaps more than some producers, but I was getting out of my director and editor's hair.
So striking that balance between being hands-on or being available, but
yeah,
perhaps not being cloying.
And also you need to save up somebody's eyes to see what's happened that week. Otherwise it's like all of you asking them each other, do you think that change is any good? And like, I'm not sure, because we've all just been watching the same scene.
Yeah, the fresh pair.
Yeah.
What's the biggest lesson that you've learned in your career thus far?
I think, like, know your own worth. And I don't necessarily mean that as an individual. Like, I think that can be you as, like, your team. Or as a producer as well, know the worth of the people that you're hiring, and, like, be prepared to defend them. Because otherwise, what's the point? Like, you've negotiated with the agent to get the costume designer or the DOP that you want, and then not to defend, like, not to get out of their way seems like madness. So I think it's just, yeah, that sense of, like, having faith in your idea and in the project that you're making, and not being afraid of what's specific about it or what's specific about yourselves. Like, you can't be everything to everyone.
With a job as all-consuming as producing, how do you balance your time? How do you prioritise? How do you clock off?
I'm terrible at it, but I need to figure it out. When we finished the festival, I went away for a few days and I was like, actually just turning my phone off in the middle of nowhere, I didn't have any phone signal, and that was really good. I was like, oh my God, I've forgotten what it's like for my brain to be quiet. I think the thing that helps, though, like, me and Georgia came up with, like, different rules and stuff when we were making Mari, and one of them was, like, we're not saving lives. Like, no one's died. What a shame it would be if any people lucky enough to make their living doing this forgot that. Also, I have mantra, which is, like, send your difficult emails before lunch.
Because
they loom over you all. Like, you've got to send that thing that's like, oh God, like, this really crunchy thing, or a phone call you've got to make, where you're like, oh,
get out.
Just do it before lunch, just do it.
Who is a woman filmmaker who's done something? It can be something you've seen recently, or an old release that you've seen recently, I mean, that you feel like is undervalued, or that more people should be talking about.
I don't know, but the first thing that popped into my brain that, like, I'm constantly recommending to people, and a surprising number of people I haven't seen, considering who made it, is In the Cut by Jane Campion.
Yes.
Because it's so kind of funny and genre-like, and, like, also Meg Ryan, what? Playing, like, a normal... It's just, I just think it's incredible. And also at the moment when we are being fed so many either problematic or just plain unimaginative versions of, like, the strong, complex female character. You know, like, it'll just be, like, some unimaginative pitch, and I'll have stuck Me Too on the end of it. And also just the number of crime programmes that have women's bodies being just, like, victimised and brutalised and don't actually examine any of the context around it or the emotional fallout or anything like that. And then here's this film that she made literally decades ago that's doing all of that just so effortlessly and in such a exciting, sort of sexy, confusing, disturbing way. It was just a revelation when I saw it.
Yeah, I mean, the BFI showed it last year and it kind of got a bit of extra attention, perhaps because of Top of the Lake and
I think that was the
flavour of it.
That was it. And I think that was when I saw it, and then Jane campaigned for Q&A after.
Mm.
And she also said one of the things that I just thought was the most beautiful images of what making a film with other people is like, which was, she said, making that film and about lots of her other films, but she said, you throw your heart in front of you and then you try and catch up.
Wow.
I was like, oh, yeah. Jane.
Right now.
I know.
And who is, they can be a kind of behind-the-scenes crews person or an editor, cinematographer, who you think we should also be paying attention to?
Holly Rebecca, who did the costume on Mari, she did the costume on I Am Not a Witch, and His House, which is coming out next year.
Okay.
Like, she's so cool. And her stuff, she's got a real playfulness around how she makes her work, but also this incredibly cinematic vision, and I just think she's extraordinary.
With costume designing, I mean, I don't really have any conception of how that works. Do you kind of sit down with them and say, this is what we want, or do you kind of let them?
I think it really depends on how the director wants to approach it. So the way Memoir was unique as well, in that the costume, a huge section of the costumes were costumes within the film as well, in that it's that dream and she is sort of seeing her dance company final polished piece in these costumes. So it was all, we had lots of discussions about how to make the dance in the film and how, you know, you see art in films, mm-hmm. like films about artists, and like some of the time it just doesn't, you just don't buy it. And me and George had a lot of discussion about how to avoid that. And I think one of the few ways you can avoid it is just actually just do it. So we just had, so we were like, okay, well, with Maxine Doyle, who was our choreographer, and with Bobby Jean and Georgia, came up with the idea of, like, what is the show that she's making?
Mm-hmm.
What would it be based around? And they did a lot of development work around what that show would have been. And then we hired Holly and she agreed to come on board. She got looped into that discussion as well. So it was slightly different. I don't know how she would usually work. She was really up for that.
Who came up with the flowers idea? I loved that scene.
So that came from that photograph. There's a photograph in the film, which is actually a photograph of George's family.
Right.
And then George and Maxie were talking about the idea of having a sort of funeral scape in the studio. And I think the basis for the dance piece was La Traviata.
Okay.
And the show is called Violetta in the film. And the themes that Maxine and Georgia were really in, and Bobby were really intrigued by, was those sort of like femininity and power and decay, and the flower motif sort of kept coming back into that quite a lot. So I think quite early on we had those. Like, we had a really amazing development week in like a month or so before we shot. We were in the Wayne McGregor studio in East London. And we had like loads of flowers and bits of costume, and we were very lucky to have that. Like, we flew Bobby over, Maxine was there, we had all of our dancers, and then we had our production designer, our DOP, Holly, our costume, come down for a bit, and Bean Ellis, who was our makeup artist, came down as well, and just have everybody in that room together
so they could see it.
Yeah, yeah. And because how dance is made was such an inspiration for the film, like, it felt really important that RHOD's got to see
that process.
Just a part of it. Yeah.
What kind of stories are you interested in telling as a producer?
That's such a hard question. It's a really hard question, but it's something I've been thinking a lot about how to begin to articulate now that I'm like working on this next project with Georgia and looking, starting tentatively to take on other projects. For me personally, I think it needs to be something that's going to sustain you for several years. Like, you're going to have to keep caring about this thing. It needs to have enough meat on it to keep you going. So I think it's about, like, what is that question? What's the question that you're trying to answer by making this film? And are you interested enough in that question to keep asking yourself it? Sometimes I see films that are almost trying to be pitched back to front, like, oh, this is a hot topic, so we'll make this. And actually, that feels a bit shallow. And I think it needs to... We had trouble articulating sometimes during developing Mari exactly what it was about. But I actually think that that's good, because it's all those subtleties that come through in the frames. And to me, that's what cinema should be about. Not necessarily like, no, I don't want to leave the cinema knowing exactly what it was that filmmaker was trying to tell me. That feels a bit
too forced.
Yeah. Sort of want it to, like take in the car. I don't really know. It just got in my skin. And I had so many questions.
It's more a mood.
Yeah.
It's less a narrative.
Yeah. Like Claire Denis is another one who does mood really well. Not sure what the message is,
no.
But the mood is like powerful.
Do you feel like there's more places from where to get stories now?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, my
just
gosh.
The internet. With
the internet. Like, I was listening to a podcast last night and I was meant to be listening to it so I could fall asleep. And then I was like, oh my God, this is a film. And then I kept listening to your story and I was like, oh my God, it's like a film within a film. Like, because one of the other thing that I really, really like, and actually I think Mari is an example of this, but films that are sort of at these weird thresholds, like I really like Dogs, but things that aren't quite one or the other.
Have you seen The Rider?
No, I haven't.
That's right up your street.
You know, things like Bombay Beach, or which I like, now can't remember her name.
I can't think of
Emma Harrell.
Okay, yeah.
Or I saw Camera Person, and I think that's one of the best films.
Yeah,
that would be possibly my top 10 films. Like, I thought that was extraordinary. But things like that.
And Skate Kitchen this year, I thought, was a good example of that. Because Crystal Mazelle is a docs director, and that's her first narrative, but even just it has the flavour of the doc all over. Well, Mari actually felt very much, as you say, it's a dance drama. Were there any other like templates when you were kind of pitching that to people?
It was really hard.
Yeah.
So you're like, what are your comps? We always had Venn diagrams, so we were like, if you take Pina, and then you take the Fitz,
yes,
and then maybe you got like a Joanna Hogg film,
smush
them all together, then maybe you have this one. People are like, that doesn't make any sense. It will, but I think there's something at once not comforting and very comforting about not having.
Yeah, because obviously you feel like you're staking out new territory when you don't have anything to compare it to, but then it's obviously so necessary when you're going to in the sales element because they want
proof. And I thought when the film was made, then that would be it. People would be like, aha. And from the funding side of things, absolutely, people are like, we understand who Georgia is and she's got this bold vision and you pull it off, and in terms of sales and distribution, even though the film is physically there and they can see what it is, they're rightly, that's not how they're thinking. They're thinking of sort of audience and how you communicate that, which is actually very, very hard. Because again, you have the same problem. It's like you can't say, if you loved, then you'll love Laurie.
How involved is a producer in that process when you're kind of selling it to distributors, and are you having to kind of put together the packaging, or is it with a sales agent?
So we don't have sales currently. We very lucky, so one of our execs is Intermission, who are a marketing company in Trailer, so they've been very helpful in terms of making materials for us. It's an interesting one with Mari to see which route it's going to take. You know, it's such a small film in lots of ways, but there's very clearly an audience for it, both just on in terms of how it's connecting with people and emotionally, but also just there is a very, very passionate dance loving audience, and Bobby obviously has quite a profile. So it's just, we're just trying to be as creative as possible about maximising that and making sure it reaches those people, because it's such a unique offer.